This is Audible.
Random House Audiobooks presents Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Edge of Victory 2, Rebirth, by Greg Keyes. Read for you by Alexander Adams. Savang La, War Master of the Yuuzhan Vong, clicked the obsidian sharp talons of his new foot against the living coral of his command chamber floor and considered it in the pale light of the mycoluminescent walls. He might have had the foot the cursed Jedi Jacen Solo took from him replaced with a clone of his own, but that would have been not only dishonorable, but personally unsatisfying. But a hobbling War Master would lose respect, so he had the foot of a Vuasa, a living beast weapon, transplanted. The pain was fading and feeling was coming into his new foot as the nerves learned their way.
War Master.
Savang recognized the voice of his aide, Silang Lian.
Speak, he said.
Kurang La has arrived, War Master, he said. And the executor, Nomanor.
They will see me now.
Savang La pronounced. Kurang La was his creche brother, a less elevated version of himself.
Belek Teo, War Master.
Kurang La saluted with crossed arms, as did the much slighter executor by his side.
Command me.
Savang La nodded at his creche brother, but fixed his gaze on Nomanor. The executor's one real eye and the venomous Plarin bowl that occupied his other socket stared unblinking back at him.
Executor, Savang La rumbled, I have taken your latest suggestions under advisement. You are certain they are ripe for conquest?
The hinges of their fortress are weakened, War Master,
Nomanor replied.
I have seen to it personally. The battle will be a quick one, the victory easily secured.
I have heard this from you before, the War Master said.
He turned his attention to the warrior.
Kurang La,
have you anything to say?
Kurang La revealed his sharpened teeth.
Conquest is always desirable, he said. However, this seems a foolish time to move. The infidels tremble before us. They dare dream our bloody path ended with Duro, and that we might be satisfied to live in the same galaxy with abomination-using vermin. This is to our advantage. The ship womb produces their destruction, but it must be given time. At this moment, our fleet is thinly scattered, more thinly than the infidels know. One misstep now, before the ship womb again swells our fleet, could be costly indeed.
There will be no cost, Nomanor asserted, and the moment to strike is now. If we wait longer, the Jedi will have more time to act.
The Jedi, Savang La snarled. Tell me, Nomanor, with all of your infidel contacts and all your self-proclaimed expertise in manipulating them, why have you been unable to bring me the one Jedi I desire above all others, Jacen Solo?
Nomanor did not flinch.
That is a most difficult task, as you know, War Master. Certain elements among the Jedi and their allies have gone rogue. They no longer answer to the Senate, or any other body where we have allies. That is my point. When you told the infidels that we would cease our conquest if the Jedi were delivered up to us, it was a brilliant strategy. It gave us time to build our force and secure our territories. It gave us many Jedi. But Jacen is kin to Skywalker, the master of them all. He is the son of Leia Organa Solo and Han Solo. Both worthy opponents. But I have strategies which will uncover them, and that will bring the others running, Jacen included. And this place you wish to feel the talons of our might? This involves the Jedi?
It does not, War Master, but it will throw their Senate into desperate confusion. It will give us the leverage we need to end the Jedi threat forever. As of now, the government of the New Republic still refuses to make it policy to outlaw the Jedi. In one stroke, I can change that, as well as building us a new fortress overlooking the core. But the time is now. If we wait, we will lose our opportunity.
Savong La murmured, considering. Nomanor, you will implement your plan. Kurang La will command the Yuuzhan Vong forces, and you will advise him how to proceed. If your advice is again flawed, there will be a more serious reckoning. If it is good, as you assure me it will be, you will atone for your recent mistakes. Do you understand?
I understand, War Master. I will not fail.
You've had worse ideas, Luke, Mara Jade Skywalker reluctantly admitted, nodding her head back so the sunlight fell on her face and her deep red-gold tresses trailed behind her. Posed that way, eyes closed, framed against the blue line of the sea, her beauty closed Luke's throat for a moment. Mara's green eyes opened, and she looked at him with a sort of wistful fondness before arching a cynical brow. "Getting all fatherly on me again?" "No," he said softly. "Just thinking how ridiculously lucky I am." "Hey, I'm the one with the hormone swings. You aren't trying to one-up me, are you?" She took his hand and gave it a squeeze. "Come on," she said. "Let's walk a bit more."
"You sure you're up to it?"
"Of course I'm up to it. I'm pregnant, not hamstrung. You think it would be better for our kid if I spent all day lying around sucking on Urp?"
"I just thought you wanted to relax."
"Absolutely. And this is relaxing. Us, all alone, on a beautiful island. Come on."
It wasn't an island at all, of course, but a carefully landscaped park atop a floating mass of polymer cells filled with inert gas. 100 or so of them cruised the artificial Western Sea of Coruscant, pleasure craft built by rich merchants.
"I wonder how Han and Leia are doing," Mara wondered aloud.
"I'm sure they're fine. They've only been gone a few days."
"I wonder if it was a good idea for Jason to go with them."
"Why not? He's proven himself capable often enough. And they're his parents. Besides, with half the galaxy after him, it's better he stay on the move."
"Right. I only meant it makes things worse for Jaina. It's hard on her, doing nothing, knowing her brother is out fighting the fight."
"I know, but Rogue Squadron will probably call her up pretty soon."
"Sure they will."
Mara sounded far from convinced.
"You don't think so?"
Luke asked.
"No, I think they would like to. But her Jedi training makes her too much of a political liability right now."
Her feelings brushed Luke in the Force, running a troubled harmony to her assertion.
"Mara, my love, I forbid any more talk about politics, Jedi, the war, the Yuuzhan Vong, anything like that. We're out here for you to relax, to forget all of that for a day or so."
"All right, but there is one very important thing I do want to say now, before another second passes," she informed him.
"What's that?"
"I'm really hungry. Really, really hungry."
"Come on," Luke said. "The pavilion isn't far. There should be food waiting."
Luke and Mara ate outside while the blossoms around them released fragrances to complement each course. Luke felt ridiculously pampered and a little guilty, but managed to relax. The mood was broken when Kenth Hamner appeared from one of the several trails leading to the pavilion.
"Kenth," Luke said, a sense of foreboding pricking up his scalp.
"To what do we owe this pleasure?"
The retired colonel smiled sadly, then said, "I came to give you a heads up. Vorskphalia has managed to secure an order for your arrest. The warrant will be served about 6 standard hours from now." Jason watched the ship approach as if in a dream. It remained a black presence against the stars. It had no running lights. It must be in the shadow of the Millennium Falcon, he thought. It was spicular, like two cones with their bases pushed together. Where the cones met, three finned, heart-like structures projected. These, Jason recognized as Dovin Basals, living creatures that bent space, time, and gravity around themselves. There could be no doubt it was a Yuuzhan Vong ship, for it was made, rather grown, from the same Yorick coral Jason had seen so many times already. Its surface was roughened by numerous small welts, as if the ship had contracted Bakuran fever bumps. When he realized the bumps were coral skippers, the Yuuzhan Vong equivalent of starfighters, he suddenly grasped the scale. The thing was the size of a dreadnought. And it was coming for them. It was almost certainly what had yanked them so brutally out of hyperspace. Jason snapped out of his fog of confusion, pushed his way along the bulkhead and out of the dorsal gunner's turret where he'd been sitting in contemplation before the sudden, terrifying jolt. He pulled himself quickly along the rungs of the ladder into the main cabin. He fought the feeling of falling. It had been a while since he experienced zero-G. Mom? Dad? His voice rang out in the silent ship. He got no answer. Frantic now, he pushed himself through the darkness to the cockpit. He found them there, and for a heart-stopping moment thought they were dead, so still were they in the Force. But both were breathing. Dad! He gently shook his father's shoulder. Han Solo stirred. Huh? What's that? It's me, Dad, Jason said. Next to him, his mother began to stir too. He couldn't feel anything seriously wrong with either of them. Jason? Han murmured. What's going on? What happened? I was hoping you knew. As near as I can tell, we've been interdicted by a Yuuzhan Vong ship. It's out there right now. I don't think we have much time. Han rubbed his eyes and looked at the control panel, where a few feeble lights were still clinging to life. He let out a long, low whistle. That's not good, he said. Han? Jason? Leia Organa Solo sat straighter in the crash couch. What's happening? The usual, Han replied, flipping switches. A few more indicators came on. Power systems offline, artificial gravity offline, emergency life support on its last legs, big ship full of bad guys outside. A really big ship, Jason added. Just like old times, Leia sighed. Hey, I told you it would be like a second honeymoon. You all right? I'm fine, Leia said. I'm wondering what made us black out. Probably the same thing that fried the power couplings, Han remarked. Then his eyes widened. Oh, no. I told you it was big, Jason said, as their lateral drift brought the Yuuzhan Vong ship into view. Do something, Han, Leia said. Do something now. I'm doing, he muttered, working at the controls. But unless someone wants to get out and push... Why aren't they doing anything? Leia wondered. They probably think we're dead in space, Han replied. They may be right. Han unbuckled himself. Take my seat, Jason. I had a shielded power core installed, but the couplings have to be changed. The second I give you power, go. And I mean go. We're too close. They'll snatch us with their Dovin Basals, Jason said. They'll snatch us for sure if we sit here, Han replied, and kicked back through the doorway. Dad, hang on. I have an idea. Always thinking. That's my boy. Nen Yin pushed through the clear membrane and stroked the pale coils of the ship's brain, the Rikyon, with her shaper's hand. Two of the fingers ended in pincers. Another had a retractable blade. All were studded with small, raised sensory nodes that tasted and smelled anything they touched. And now she trembled, for the scent here was morbid. The Rikyam is dying, she murmured to the novice at her side. It is more than half dead. The novice, a young man named Sung Aru, twitched the tendrils of his headdress in dismay. How can that be? He asked. Look around you, novice.
The Banu Mir worldship is dying, novice. Why should the brain be any different? I'm sorry, adept,
Suung said, his tendrils knotted in genuflection.
Only, what is to be done? Go now, and leave me to contemplate this matter. Yes, adept.
A moment later, she was alone in the inner torus. Even so, she looked about furtively before peeling down the front of the living Ujith that clung to her body and served to cover most of it from sight. Beneath the Ujith, clinging to her belly, was a film-flat creature. It retained the vestigial eyes of its fish-like ancestor, but otherwise resembled an olive and black mottled pouch, which was more or less what it was, a very special sort of container. She reached back through the osmotic membrane to touch the fractal coils of the Rikyan. With the pincer on her smallest finger, she clipped off four discrete pieces of the brain and placed them in the pouch. The material closed lovingly around the coils, lubricating them with oxygen-rich fluids that would keep them healthy until she reached her laboratory and a more permanent way of keeping the neurons alive. She took a deep breath, contemplating the enormity of what she was about to do. The shapers were guided and strictured by the protocols, the thousands of techniques and applications given them by the gods in the misty past. To experiment, to try to invent new protocols, was heresy of the first order. Nen Yim was a heretic. Her master, Meijan Quad, had been as well before the Jedi child Tahiri took her brilliant head from her neck. With her death, Meijan Quad had absorbed most of the blame for the heresy. Even so, Nen Yim had been spared only because shapers were already too scarce. She replaced the pouch creature on her abdomen and rolled the Ujith back over it. Then she left the dying brain and returned through dim corridors to her laboratory suite.
Arrest us? Mara asked Tamner. Her voice was radium at absolute zero, and Luke shivered. It was the voice of the woman who had once tried to kill him and very nearly succeeded.
What's the charge? Luke asked. Felia has evidence that you were behind the unsanctioned military action at Yavin 4 a few months ago, Hamner said. That opens you to a variety of charges, I'm afraid, especially since as chief of state he expressly forbid you to engage in any such activity. Luke nodded tersely. After the Yuuzhan Vong Warmaster offered to stop with the worlds he had already conquered so long as all of the Jedi were turned over to him, I realized the students at the Jedi Academy were in danger. I asked Talon Card to evacuate them. When he arrived, the Peace Brigade was already there trying to capture the students and turn them over to the Yuuzhan Vong as a peace offering. Card wouldn't let them do that. Hamner's long face nodded thoughtfully. I don't blame you. I only wish you had contacted me. I knew this was going to come out eventually, Luke murmured. I had thought it might be overlooked. The days when Felia might have overlooked Jedi activities are long gone, Hamner said. Luke nodded. What's your opinion, Kent? Luke, I don't think you'll be brought to trial or any such thing. This will be a house arrest. You'll be expected to make a general statement to the Jedi to stop any unsanctioned activity. The Jedi are being hunted all over the galaxy, and I'm expected to tell them not to fight back? I'm telling you how it is. Kenth, I'm sorry, I can't do that. I'll try to keep my people out of the way of the military, but other than that, well, the Jedi have a mission older than the New Republic. Hamner paused, as if considering his next words very carefully. I don't think Felia imagines you will stand for it either. You mean he thinks we'll run and further implicate ourselves? Not exactly. He wants to be able to say you are out of his reach and no longer his responsibility. He wants me in exile, Luke concluded. Yes. Luke sighed. I was afraid this time would come. Yes, here we are, Mara snarled. Felia had better pray, I don't... Her impassioned diatribe halted in its birth, and a look of profound fear moved across her face. Mara? Something's wrong. she said weakly, her face draining of color.
Something is really wrong.
She wrapped her arms around her belly and clenched her eyes shut. Luke sprang from his seat.
Hamner, get an MD droid, now! He yelled.
In the Force, he felt Mara slipping away. On board the errant Venture, Anakin was busy underneath the supply transport Luker, micro-adjusting the repulsor pads, when a pinkish pair of bare feet appeared. He couldn't see the person the feet belonged to, but he knew who it was immediately.
Hi, Tahiri, he called.
Hi yourself,
the indignant reply came. Knees squatted down onto the feet, then a pair of green eyes, surrounded by a cloud of golden hair, came into view.
Come out from under there, Anakin Solo.
Sure, just let me finish up.
Finish up what? You have some reason to be tinkering with this ship?
Uh-oh. Anakin sighed and pushed himself out from underneath the transport.
I was going to tell you, he protested.
When? Just before you smoke jets out of here?
Tahiri, I'll be back. Corin and I are going to Eriadu for supplies, that's all.
She punched him in the shoulder, hard.
You could have told me.
Ow!
He pushed farther away and sat up.
What was that for?
What do you think?
She straightened too, and the rest of her face came into focus. Her forehead was etched by three nasty vertical scars. The Yuuzhan Vong had tried to make her into one of their own. The scars were the most superficial reminders of the process.
Look, I know I promised you I wouldn't leave yet, but this won't take long. I'm getting deck fever. Didn't it ever occur to you how I might feel?
I thought I had considered that, Anakin said.
I don't understand what you're asking me to do. You want me to stay here with you?
Anakin speculated.
No, dummy, Tahiri said. I want you to take me with you.
Oh. He felt a profound confusion.
You're sure you're ready for that?
He asked.
For what? It's just a supply run, right? Minimal danger, nowhere near Yuuzhan Vong space?
Right, Anakin said cautiously, but there's always danger. Tahiri's voice took on a softer, pleading note.
Let me go with you, Anakin.
Okay, he said.
Next time, just ask. You don't always have to come after me like I've done something wrong. We don't have to fight everything out.
She smiled.
Sorry. You never mean to do anything wrong. Most time, it just turns out that way.
R2-D2 tootled and bleated as he went about the task Jason had assigned him. The little droid had extended his linkage and repair arms into one of the compact missiles floating near the narrow trash exhaust tube. A clumsy clank sounded behind Jason as C-3PO struggled with weightlessness.
Oh dear,
3PO said.
I wasn't built for this, you know. Zero gravity confuses my circuits.
Just hang on to something, Jason muttered. He closed the panel on the final missile.
Okay, time for your part, 3PO. I need you to cycle the trash exhaust lock manually.
But Master Jason, all of the air will evacuate.
True, but I won't be here. I'll be on the other side of the outer pressure lock. The vacuum won't hurt you.
I suppose not. But why, Master Jason?
I need you to take each of these missiles to the end of the dump vent and give them a good shove in the direction of that Yuuzhan Vong interdictor.
But, what if I fall out of the ship?
Jason smiled thinly.
Don't. Once all the missiles are away, you and R2 seal the vent, cycle the lock again, and get back inside. I'll keep in touch by comm.
Yes, sir.
Jason pushed out, plugged in a portable power source, and cycled the inner lock. He made his way to where his mother was keeping watch from the cockpit.
All quiet? He asked.
For now, she said.
Good. I just sent some concussion missiles floating their way. With any luck, they'll think it's flotsam until it's too late.
He concentrated briefly.
There, the first is away.
3PO was slow. It was a good 5 minutes before he got the next one out. The third took even longer. Han came drifting up from beneath. I have the ship's functions back online. Are we ready? Jason activated the intercom. How's it going, 3PO?
Dreadful, sir. I have two more to go.
coral skipper's detaching,
Leia observed suddenly.
Negative 3PO, Jason said. Get out of there now.
With pleasure, sir.
Ready, everyone? Han asked.
Go, Leia replied.
Han worked his fingers across the instrument, and with a sudden snap, gravity reasserted itself. Jason, where are your missiles?
The first one is ready to go.
Send the detonation signal on three. One, two... Jason held his breath as he keyed the signal on three and blew it out when the distant concussion missile became a small white nova. At the same moment, Han kicked in the ion drive, and they were going as only the Millennium Falcon could go.
They're trying to get a lock with their Devon basals, Leia reported.
Jason, Han shouted.
Yes, sir.
Jason sent another signal, and the remaining missiles surged to life, burning their propellant cores and hurling their noses at the Yuuzhan Vong ship. Gravitic anomalies appeared and sucked all but one in, but the fourth impacted in a brilliant display. Leia whooped.
Han, get us out of here.
What do you think I'm doing? For an instant, nothing happened. Then the stars were gone, and Jason sagged in his couch.
Mara had slipped into unconsciousness by the time the island's MD-10 medical droid had been activated. Luke gripped her hand as she lay on the grass near their table. Kenth Hamner stood by, restless but silent. Luke watched, taut, as the medical droid dispassionately checked her vitals. In the midst of it, her eyes fluttered open again, and he saw his own helpless fear reflected there.
"It's the baby," she said. "It's our baby. Luke..."
"It's going to be fine," he promised firmly. The MD reached a diagnosis a moment later.
"Toxic shock reaction in the placenta indicates 4 cc's of Cardinex."
"Do it," Luke commanded. He watched as the hypo delivered the dosage. Within seconds, Mara's breathing calmed, and her color began to return.
"What caused it?" Luke demanded of the droid.
"Unknown chemical agent."
"Poison?"
"Negative. Placental reaction unusual. The substance is not otherwise toxic. Substance is complex saline compound. Partial analysis."
It listed a sequence of chemicals.
"Vergere's tears,"
Mara said softly.
"Tears?" Kenth Hamner said, confused.
"The Yuuzhan Vong infected me with some sort of biotic weapon," Mara explained. "It tried pretty hard to kill me. It would have too, except that creature with the Yuuzhan Vong assassin."
"The one who pretended to defect?"
"Elon, yes. She had a sort of pet or familiar who gave Han a vial of her tears. Or at least, that's what she said they were. She told him I should take them. It felt right to me, so I did. My disease went into remission."
Hamner's long face looked thoughtful. "And you think the tears caused what just happened to you?"
"I ran out of the tears a few months ago," Mara said. "I've been taking a synthesized version. Luke, it's killing our son."
"I can have you at a medical facility in 10 minutes, Hamner told Mara.
"No!"
Mara nearly shouted.
"Then we'd lose our chance to escape Felia."
"Mara, we don't have a choice," Luke said.
"We do,"
she insisted.
"I won't have my child born under house arrest. If I don't take the tears, I should be fine."
Luke closed his eyes and searched the back of his lids for options. He found none.
"Okay," he said finally.
Jaina rolled her X-Wing into the night shadow of Coruscant, reveling in the feel of the stick in her hand, the shifting crush of acceleration. For months, she had been forced out of the cockpit by damaged eyes, and even after they were healed, Rogue Squadron had shown a marked reluctance to recall her. Only today, Colonel Darklighter, the very man who had asked her to join the squadron, had suggested she extend her leave of absence indefinitely. Her joy of flying was leaking out of her when the comm demanded attention.
It was Aunt Mara, and she sounded more troubled than Jaina felt.
Jaina, where are you?
Mara asked. Just out. What's the matter?
We're taking the Jade Shadow up. Meet me, will you? It's important.
She ticked off a list of coordinates. Sure, Jaina replied. Laying that course now.
And Jaina, keep your eyes open. Trust no one.
Mara, what?
We'll discuss it when we rendezvous.
Great, Jaina thought. What else could be going wrong?
On board the Jade Shadow, as Luke watched Coruscant dwindle, he felt a strange elation, a kind of freedom he hadn't known he missed. He glanced over at Mara. How are you feeling?
Fine now. I contacted Jaina. She'll meet us in orbit.
She eased the angle of their climb and glanced at Luke.
This is the right thing to do, you know.
I'm still not sure.
It's done now. Where are we going, by the way?
We'll find Booster first, he decided. I've arranged a way for us to contact him. The Errant Venture will have some of the medical facilities you need, at least. Your health is our first priority right now. Mara made a face at her instruments.
Looks like your first priority has been bumped back. I've got planetary security hailing us and at least four ships on an intercept course.
Luke opened to the hail and activated the visual communications array.
Jade Shadow, this is planetary security.
The screen showed a pale gold Bothan.
You must return to ground immediately. Slave yourselves to us for escort.
Luke smiled tightly. This is Luke Skywalker of the Jade Shadow. We're outward bound and not prepared to turn back. The Bothan looked extremely uncomfortable.
I have my orders, Master Skywalker. Please help me carry them out with minimum fuss.
I'm sorry for the inconvenience, Captain, but we aren't returning to ground.
I'm authorized to use force, Master Skywalker.
This ship will defend itself, Luke replied reluctantly. Let us go, Captain.
I'm sorry, I can't.
Luke shrugged. Then we really have nothing else to discuss. He switched off the comm. Within moments, the approaching ships were in sight.
Hang on, Skywalker, Mara said.
A moment later, she began to fire. If we weren't outlaws before, we are now, Luke thought. Jaina couldn't believe what she was seeing. The Jade Shadow was under fire from four security interceptors. What was going on? She powered up her weapons and dived in, ignoring the hails from the security ships, but sending her own signal to the Shadow. It was Uncle Luke that answered. What did you do to irk the Sky Cops? Jaina said.
Stay out of this, Jaina, Luke told her.
Yeah, right, that'll happen. She was close enough to fire now, and fire she did. Rolling between the trailing interceptor and spearing it with her lasers as she went past. The heavy shield took the shots easily, but she achieved the desired effect. The interceptor had noticed her now. A few lucky shots grazed her shield, but they had a long way to go before they could bring her down. She nosed back up and had her pursuer in her sights again. She eyed her proton torpedoes speculatively. She could take them out with those, but she still wasn't sure what was going on here, and it was probably a bad idea to kill someone in Coruscant's security force. A moment later, a cloud of blips appeared on her long-range sensors. 12 starfighters, maybe more, and the Jade Shadow was flying right into them.
It was terrible, just terrible,
3PO went on.
Master Jason, I told you I wasn't suited for that sort of thing.
You did just fine, 3PO. You saved us.
Oh, well, I suppose. You're quite welcome. Do you think we've really escaped them?
Han stepped into the cabin and answered that. We left on a pretty messy vector. Even I'm not exactly sure where we're headed. We'll drop out soon and get our bearings, but I'm willing to bet we're not being followed.
Leia entered and lowered herself onto one of the couches.
What did they hit us with? She asked.
Something we haven't seen yet, Jason said.
It shut our systems down, but didn't really do a lot of damage to them.
It shut us down, too, Leia pointed out.
Yeah, it did at that, Han allowed.
So, now what? Leia asked.
Now?
Well, now we know the inner Corellian run is hotter than Novashine.
Han frowned.
This whole thing is nuts. Luke's great river.
Make me a river, Han, a stream to carry the endangered, the wounded, the weary to safety.
Very poetic. But how do we do it?
Leia frowned. Han, we can do it. We have to.
Luke watched the blockade grow larger.
Oh boy, Mara said.
No, Luke murmured, placing his hand on her shoulder. Don't you see? They're no danger to us. Jaina's voice crackled over the comm.
That's Rogue Squadron. I can't believe they would...
She was interrupted by a hail that came simultaneously to the Jade Shadow. Gavin Darklighter's image appeared on the Shadow's display.
Jade Shadow, it looks like you could use some help.
This is unwise, Gavin, Luke responded carefully. Those are Coruscant security forces pursuing us.
I've explained their mistake to them,
Gavin replied.
They won't trouble you again.
They'll just send for more ships. This could really develop into a situation.
Maybe the sort of situation this Republic needs,
Gavin replied.
First Corrin, now you? Enough is enough. Felia is selling us off to the Yuuzhan Vong a piece at a time.
No, he's not. I have my disagreements with him, obviously, but he's trying to save the Republic in his own way. A civil war can only make us weaker.
Not if we make it quick and painless.
Gavin, we aren't having this conversation, Luke replied.
Okay, I just wanted you to know you have support.
Jaina answered the private hail from Gavin Darklighter, trying to keep composed.
Yes, Colonel, she said. How may I help you?
Watch after Master Skywalker, Jaina. He needs you.
I'll do my best, sir. Is that all?
No. I made a mistake, not putting you back on duty once your vision was recovered. I'm sorry for that. I'd like you to consider yourself still a part of the squadron.
I appreciate that, Rogue Leader, she said quietly. You understand that right now...
As I said, Master Skywalker needs you now. You're still on leave as far as I'm concerned. Go, and may the Force be with you.
Jaina, I need you to do something, Luke said. Coruscant was light years behind them. There was room for an X-Wing on the Shadow, but that space was already occupied by Luke's starfighter. Thus, they chatted over the comm. Mara and Luke had filled her in on the details of their flight from Coruscant, and Jaina, in turn, had explained her continued detachment from Rogue Squadron.
Yes, Uncle Luke?
I need you to find Kip Duran for me. I need to talk to him.
He didn't have much good to say at the last meeting. Why should things be any different now?
Now, I may have some things to say he might want to hear, Luke replied.
Unless you're going to join him in guerrilla warfare against the Yuuzhan Vong, I doubt that,
she replied. Be that as it may, it's imperative that the Jedi start drawing ourselves back together.
If you ask me to find him, I'll find him,
Jaina said.
I found Booster Tarek, didn't I?
This will be a lot easier than that, I should think, Luke replied. I know exactly where Kip is.
How?
I took the liberty of placing a tracer on his ship.
What? If the Yuuzhan Vong picked that up...
I didn't endanger Kip. It's something new one of Card's people came up with to help us find each other without leaking our positions. Booster has one too, so we'll be able to find the errant venture with relative ease. No one without the encryption key can use it to track him.
Wow. Have I been fitted with one of those?
No, but the Shadow has, and I'll give you that encryption too, along with Booster's.
Sounds good. Where's Kip now?
That's the disturbing thing. He's near Cernpadal. A shiver feathered along Jaina's neck. Cernpadal? Where Chewie had died. Cernpadal was as deep in Yuuzhan Vong territory as one could go. Luke grimaced. She could tell that sending her off like this wasn't something he did without reservations. Thanks, Jaina, he said. and may the Force be with you.
It stinks,
Tahiri exclaimed, wrinkling her nose. Yep, Corin agreed. Welcome to Eriadu.
Is Coruscant like this?
Tahiri asked.
Not really, Anakin said.
For one thing, the buildings on Coruscant aren't this ugly.
It's not ugly, Tahiri said.
She sounded defensive.
It's different.
Off to their right on the landing dock, a bulk freighter cut its repulsor lifts and settled on its landing pads.
Okay, Corin said. I'm going to arrange for the supplies we need. You two...
Stay and guard the ship, I bet, Anakin muttered. Right. Tahiri's brow ruffled.
You mean I came all this way and don't even get to see the place?
Tahiri, this is not a pleasure trip. No one's bothered to check our transponder codes yet, but if they do, we could run into trouble. We need to get our supplies and get out of here as quickly as possible.
Well, okay,
Tahiri assented. She sat on the landing ramp, legs folded underneath her. Together, she and Anakin watched Corin flag a ground transport and enter it. A few moments later, the vehicle vanished from sight.
I lied a minute ago.
Really?
About what?
She nodded at the cityscape.
I said it wasn't ugly, but part of me thinks it is.
Well, I don't think it's all that attractive either, Anakin replied.
No, Tahiri said. It's not like that. It's just that part of me sees this and thinks, abomination.
Oh. The Yuuzhan Vong had done more to Tahiri than cut her face. They had implanted memories in her, of their language, of a childhood in a creche, of growing up on a world ship.
If you hadn't rescued me, Anakin, I would be one of them now. I wouldn't remember any other life.
Part of you would have always known, Anakin disagreed. There's something in you, Tahiri, that no one could ever change. She shot him a startled frown.
What do you mean? You mean I'm too stubborn, or...
Something inside her cut her sentence off short.
Did you feel that?
She asked in a hushed voice. And at the moment, Anakin did. Something in the Force.
It's a Jedi, he murmured. A Jedi in trouble. Bad trouble.
She uncoiled like a released spring. Tahiri, no. I'll go. Someone has to stay with the ship.
You do it then. I'm going. Just wait a second. Let me figure this out. I don't need you to figure anything out for me. One of us is in trouble. I'm going to help.
She was on her way down the landing ramp. Repeating some of his father's more inventive expletives, Anakin hurriedly sealed the ship and ran after her. She was already out of sight, but he knew where she was going. The Jedi they were both feeling was in more distress than ever. Anakin pushed his way through vendors and street performers and turned into a long cul-de-sac. A crowd of vagabonds was gathered, watching a murder about to happen. The victim was a Jedi, a Rodian. He stood against a wall, trying to keep his lightsaber up. Five beings faced him, two with blasters, three with stun batons. All had just turned to face Tahiri, who was about 6 meters from them, arriving at a dead run, her lightsaber swirling bright patterns over her head. Taking advantage of Tahiri's distraction, the Rodian lurched forward. One of the men with a blaster shot him, and the descending screech of the bolt reverberated off the surrounding buildings. Tahiri's blade sheared through a stun baton, nearly taking the hand of the thick-set woman wielding it. The thugs with the stun batons backpedaled, drawing blasters instead of taking up the fight hand-to-hand. Tahiri pressed on, catching one of them and snipping the end of his weapon off. Another man fired at her and missed. They started to encircle her. Finally, Anakin arrived. He recognized the Rodian Jedi as Kelbis Nu. The man who had shot the Rodian saw Anakin coming, took careful aim, and fired twice. Two bolts winged off the walls, courtesy of Anakin's lightsaber. He was running past the man, deftly slicing the blaster in half as he went, when he felt a gun pointing at him. Anakin dropped and rolled as the bolt screamed over his head. A person screamed, too. The man who had shot Kelbis knew. The blast meant for Anakin had ricocheted off one of the buildings and struck the man high in the chest, and he fell, legs kicking. Anakin came back to his feet and found Tahiri facing two men still armed with blasters and two unarmed. They looked uncertain. It was only then that Anakin realized, by their patches and uniforms, that they were Peace Brigade. The thugs started backing out of the alley in a small knot, blasters pointed defensively. Anakin stood about a meter to Tahiri's right and a little in front of her.
"Let's take him," she said.
Her voice had a furious cold quality to it that Anakin had heard when she was under the heaviest influence of her Yuuzhan Vong conditioning. "No," Anakin said. "Let them go." His generosity didn't stop the Peace Brigaders from taking a parting shot as they ducked around the corner.
"Jedi brats!" one of the men shouted. "Your days are numbered!"
Anakin turned to survey the damage. The Peace Brigader had stopped moving, but Kelbis knew was still alive. Barely. His glassy eyes were looking beyond Anakin, but he reached up a hand.
"Yeah,"
he said weakly. Anakin took Nu's hand and pulsed strength from the Force into him.
"Hold on for me," he said. "Help will be here soon."
Suddenly, Kelbis Nu went still. His trembling ceased. And for the first time, he seemed to actually see Anakin.
"Yagdul,"
the Rodian whispered. And behind that whisper was a storm wind of danger. That was all. The Jedi's life left him with his last breath.
"He's gone," Anakin said.
"He can't be," Tahiri said. "I was going to save him."
"I'm sorry," Anakin said. "We got here too late."
"He said something at the end, though."
"What?"
"The name of a planet. Yagdul. And I felt danger. Like he was trying to tell me something bad is happening there."
He glanced down at the bodies.
"Come on, we'd better go."
And as if to highlight his point, a trio of speeders arrived at the cul-de-sac and disgorged armed, uniformed people. The officers approached warily, led by a lanky, craggy-faced man. He looked down at the two bodies and back up at Anakin and Tahiri. Then his eyes focused on their lightsabers. He raised his gun.
"Place your weapons on the ground," he said.
"We didn't do this," Tahiri exploded. "We were trying to help."
"It is my duty to inform you that as officers of the judicials, we are detaining you for questioning and possible prosecution."
"What? You're arresting us?" Tahiri said.
"Until we sort this out, yes. Make this easy on yourselves."
But words are only the shadows of thoughts. And behind the officers' words, Anakin felt something that suggested that this was going to be anything but easy. By the time Jaina reached the vicinity of the Cernpadal system, her X-Wing felt like a suit of clothes she'd been wearing for way too long. Jedi meditation techniques and isometrics made the long hyperspace jumps bearable, but nothing could hide the fact that there was no room on an X-Wing for a shower, or room to stand up or to walk. But she was near her goal now. Somewhere down there, or so the tracer told her, was Kip Duran. Jaina started sweeping with long-range sensors. Kip wasn't at Cernpadal anymore, but a system several very strange jumps away. She punched up the stellar survey. The star had a number, but not a name, and was sheathed in frozen carbon dioxide and water ice. No known life in the system. No resources that couldn't be found more easily elsewhere. But Kip Duran had come here. She followed the beacon in, and as she was making orbit, a pair of X-Wings rose up to meet her. One had the beacon in it. A few moments later, she answered what turned out to be Kip's hail.
"Amazing," he said. "Simply amazing. Jaina Solo, you continue to find ways to surprise me."
"Hello, Kip."
"If the Force guided you here, it's almost too frightening."
"How so?"
"Because I was just about to come looking for you and Rogue Squadron,"
Kip answered. "Really?"
"Yep.
I found something, Jaina. Something I can't handle with my dozen. Something that could strike a death blow to the Republic if we don't deal with it now while we can.
What are you talking about? Jaina asked.
I'd rather tell you in person. Follow me in.
Kip and his followers had melted tunnels and caves through the ice and sealed it, then sifted an oxygen-nitrogen mix from higher up, where the planet's atmosphere had condensed when its primary went cold. We keep it right at freezing in here, Kip explained, so our humble home doesn't melt. He handed her a parka. You'll want that. To tell you the truth, Jaina said, the cold feels good. Almost as good as it feels to stand up. First things first, Jaina. Do you mind telling me why you're here?
Master Skywalker sent me to talk to you.
Really? He has something new to say?
He and Mara fled Coruscant after Borsk Failure ordered their arrest.
Kip blinked and his brow creased.
Come in here and sit down, he said.
He ushered her into what was obviously his war room. A portable sensor sweep, a tactical display, and star charts were its furnishings. He pulled up a collapsing chair for Jaina and one for himself. That was uncommonly stupid, he murmured, even for Failure. So what is Master Skywalker doing now?
Aunt Mara's pregnant, you know. It's not long before her time comes. They're hiding out with Booster Tarek. Uncle Luke intends to find a planet to build a Jedi base on.
Kip's eyes narrowed.
A base for what? To operate from. A place where endangered Jedi can go. A place for them to strike from.
Jaina, Kip said, choose your words carefully. What do you mean by strike? Don't put words in the Master's mouth just because you think I want to hear them. Jaina looked down at the floor.
No, she said. He's still not advocating what you're doing. He's trying to build a network to pass people and information in and out of Yuuzhan Vong space. A system of places like this, and ships.
But no bringing the fight home to the Yuuzhan Vong.
Not exactly, not the way you mean. But Kip, he is doing something, and he needs your help.
Kip shook his head. I think he sent you out here to find out what I'm doing.
Partly, but he also sent me to bring you back into the fold.
Kip rubbed his jaw thoughtfully for a moment. I don't object to what Master Skywalker is doing. He's right, I can be of help to him in certain sectors. And I'll do it. I'll meet with him. But Jaina, I need something from you in return.
What?
Jaina asked wearily.
I'm not on good terms with any of the military leaders. I need someone who is. Is that still you?
Jaina thought back to her last encounter with Rogue Squadron, and Wedge Antilles, so far as she knew, was still on the side of the Jedi.
They might listen to me, she allowed.
Good, Kip said and leaned forward on his elbows. I've been known to accuse the New Republic and the Jedi of being slow to act, of having their priorities confused. Sometimes I've been right, maybe other times I've misstated the case. This time... He tapped on a holodisplay. There's this. The thing, portrayed in the holograph, was clearly a Yuuzhan Vong ship. It had the same organic look to it as the larger ships Jaina had already seen, but in form it was quite different. It spidered across the sky, a huge, multi-legged thing, with each leg curving in the same direction, so the whole thing looked like a mad sculptor's attempt to portray a spiral galaxy. It was beautiful and terrible, and it made her mouth dry to look at it.
So what is it? She asked.
A gravitic weapon.
Like a Dove and Basil?
Kip laughed. Dove and Basils, the big ones, can pull down a moon. They can generate anomalies that resemble quantum black holes. This thing could collapse a star. Kip tapped the holo console again. The view zoomed out. This is time-lapsed, he said. Jaina watched, at first not understanding what she was seeing. From the primary's corona, a small flare erupted. Something she had seen happen on numerous occasions around numerous stars. But the flare kept going, first a full solar diameter, then two. And as it grew longer, it gathered strength rather than diminishing,
and became a ribbon of superheated hydrogen and helium. In the artificial quickness of time-lapse, it was only moments before the streamer reached the gigantic Yuuzhan Vong construction.
Emperor's black bones, Jaina breathed. If we let them take that thing out, nothing can stop them.
Speechless, Jaina could only nod in horrified agreement.
I'll go to Rogue Squadron with it, she said at last. It's the only place I know where I might still be welcome, and Colonel Darklighter will know what to do. But I'll need your data.
Packed up and ready to go, and I'm going with you, just to make sure you get there.
Oh my goodness!
3PO bleated as the Falcon dropped out of hyperspace with a sort of flat thud that sent them all a centimeter into the air.
It's another one of those terrible Yuuzhan Vong interdictors.
Relax, 3PO, Han said, his voice so dry he sounded almost bored. The inertial dampers are just being a little cranky, that's all. Han's expression metamorphosed into something less relaxed when the mass detector bleeped.
It's a freighter, Leia said. Kuat Drive Yard's Marl-class heavy freighter.
Out here? Han said incredulously. Where could she be going? Hot space?
Maybe it's a relief vessel, Leia said. Or a smuggler running weapons to the huts.
That thing's got no legs, Han said. Any smuggler worth his spice would know better. He set his lips. I just had an unpleasant thought. Leia nodded grimly.
I just had the same thought.
Have they seen us yet? Han asked.
I doubt it.
Good. Let's keep it that way. Run silent and let them pass. Then we'll see for sure where they're going.
Look there, Leia said, pointing at a large blip on the long-range scanner as Jason entered the cockpit.
I see, Han breathed. Yuuzhan Vong.
Jason studied the long-range scanner readouts.
They're attacking that freighter? He asked.
No, Han said. They ain't attacking it, kid. They're escorting it.
Escorting? Where are we?
One jump from the Cha-Raba system, Han replied.
Cha-Raba? That's where Yalesia is, right?
Kid gets a gold epaulette, Han murmured.
And Yalesia is where the Peace Brigade is headquartered, Leia added.
So that ship...
Supplies for the Brigade and the Vong, Han concluded. Couldn't have figured it better myself.
Well, we have to stop them, Leia said.
What?
Jason asked. Why? They haven't attacked us. They don't even see us.
True enough, Han said. Gives us a nice advantage.
But I thought this mission was about setting up networks for refugees and intelligence. No one said anything about taking the fight to the enemy.
Jason, Leia said, you know I respect what you're trying to do, but you have to understand something.
I understand, Jason interrupted. I understand that you told me this mission was about something I could get on board with, and now in the middle of the flight you're changing the coordinates. I'm not trying to tell you what to believe, but when you brought me along on this trip...
When I brought you along on this trip, Han said, his voice tight, I never said you could be captain, and I didn't tell you this is a democracy.
Jason, I love you. Now sit down, shut up, and do as you're told.
Jason was so stunned by his father's anger that it did not, at that moment, even occur to him to continue the argument.
Great, Han said.
So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take out that Yuuzhan Vong escort, and then we're going to make the freighter an offer.
Offer? Leia said.
Yep. We'll offer not to blow her open to space if she surrenders quietly. He checked his panel. Power in 5 minutes. Jason, get down to the turbo laser.
Jason hesitated, a painful, sickening knot growing in his gut.
Okay. And I want you to use it.
I will, sir.
And with that, Jason stalked out of the cockpit.
The Villip squirmed, stretching itself to its limits in an attempt to portray the fine mass of tendrils that composed the living headdress of Master Julan Quad. It did not entirely succeed, but did so sufficiently well that Nen Yim was able to tell that the senior master of her domain was agitated.
Why disturb me, over such a question?
Julan Quad asked.
You have access to the Kang Casa, do you not?
I do indeed, Master Quad, Nen Yim replied. However, the Casa does not grant a mere adept entry to protocols beyond the fifth cortex.
Nor should it. Adepts are not ready for such secrets. Especially adepts such as yourself. You and your deceased master disgraced our clan.
That is true, Nen Yim said carefully. However, Warmaster Tsavang La chose to pardon me and reward me with a chance to further serve the glorious Yun Yuzhan. I should think my domain would do as much.
Do not presume what your domain would do,
Julan Quad replied testily.
Even the Yim Kresh would not do as much. The Warmaster is a warrior, covered in glory and more than ample as a warrior. But he is not a shaper, and he does not know how dangerous your heresies are.
Master, the ship is dying. I need your help.
Each of us begins to die the instant we are born. Our ships are no different, Adept.
He spoke her title as if it hurt his mouth to do so.
Yes, Master, she said.
Her experiments had yielded mostly frustration, and if a master of her own domain would not help her, no one would.
Thank you for your time, Master Julan Quad.
One moment, Adept. I have reconsidered. I feel it foolish to leave you unsupervised, lest you bring more shame to us all. I will dispatch a master to govern you. He will arrive within 2 days. Obey him well.
The villa cleared before she could answer. It hadn't occurred to her that Julan Quad would send a master, only that he might find the protocol and transmit it to her. A master here would see what she had done, and how. Perhaps the new master would save Banu Mir, and that was good. But Adept Nen Yim would soon embrace death.
Put that lightsaber down now, girlie, the craggy-faced judicial demanded. Tahiri couldn't believe what she was hearing. Girlie, she shot back. Uh-oh, Anakin thought. Now we're really in for it. Tahiri, fighting isn't always the answer, he cautioned. You got any better ideas?
Anakin cocked his head toward one of the speeders the judicials had parked nearby. How about driving?
Doroit Vong Prate!
Tahiri suddenly shouted. What? The craggy officer, confused, lowered his blaster. Anakin dashed to the speeder, Tahiri right behind. The two jumped onto the vehicle. Anakin bypassed the code and started the speeder. He throttled it up to full as he turned the corner and climbed, ignoring the craft's warning that he was not in an authorized traffic lane. A few blaster bolts seared by, along with a number of obscenities. Then they were out of range of both. By the time they reached the spaceport, Anakin and Tahiri had picked up a respectable tail and were starting to dodge long-range fire. For that reason, when Anakin saw the Lucre cargo port open, he dove the nimble craft directly into it, nearly killing it.